help me welcome our speaker tonight, Sean from the Joy of Living Group.
Hi, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Sean.
Hi, Sean.
My sobriety date is October 21st, 2006. I have a home group called the Joy of Living. We study steps and traditions every Saturday from 10:30 to 11:30. It's up in the west end of Allentown. Please come and see us. I have a sponsor, and she knows that I'm responsive. I talk to her every Friday morning at 8:30, and I have the privilege of carrying this message and taking other women through the steps. I'm going to share in a general way what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I used to say all the time, I'm going to say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And someone pointed out to me, that's not what it says in the book. It says what we were like, what happened, and what we are like now. I'm going to try very, very hard just to share my experience and keep my opinions to myself, because I'm an alcoholic. I have a lot of opinions. So there's nothing exciting about my drunkalog. I grew up in a town outside of Philadelphia called Lafayette Hill, Pennsylvania. Upper middle class. I used to be embarrassed about that in AA. You know, for some reason I thought you guys would reject me, you know, if I was a country club kind of person. And again, just all that self-centered fear. You know, I didn't want to show up and be who I really was. So I try to be, even in AA, whatever I thought you would accept the most. And that has been my way since I was about 5 years old. My father is sort of a self-made, very successful guy. He came from a really poor part of the city. And because of that, I think I picked up my parents' attitudes that like, yeah, we have money, but like we're not old money, you know, and what we have, like we have to go overboard to prove to people, you know, how successful we are. And so it drove a lot of dysfunctional behaviors in myself. And that's not why I drank, though. No, it's just my own weirdness. And some of that weirdness was revealed to me when I did the steps. And I picked up my first drink at age 13. There was, I can't say it was love at first sight, honestly. It was, it made me cool. I like that. Because my parents were big drinkers. I grew up in the 70s, right across the street from a golf course. Drinking was, and I'm Irish, so I mean, it was just a thing. Like, we drank all the time. Drinking was not prohibited when I was a teenager. In fact, my parents had the attitude, we'd rather have you drink at home than be out on the road. So I was the kid that had the keg parties and, you know, was wildly popular because of that. I knew deep down in my heart, though, I was only popular because of the booze. It wasn't because of me. Because if you really knew me, you know. So denial ran really deep for me because I was extremely successful in school. I went to college. I had a 4.0. I'm drinking every night and I'm handling it. My father, like I said, was a very successful businessman. He was a guy that wore a suit and a tie. He drank every single day. But he never got mean. He never got violent. He just had his martinis, Manhattans, and went back in the bedroom, went to bed. I mean, it was so normal. So I didn't think there was anything wrong with my way of life. I graduated college. I started working. Flipped a couple cars over. Anybody's familiar with Bluebell, Wingsfield? There was this big sharp turn. And all these things it should have said to me, you know what, Sean, I think you should slow down. Not at all. It was, I needed new tires. Or, you know, I needed to eat before I went out. So dry goods are a part of my story. But what they did for me was they just enabled me to drink all night long. I did get into the distribution end of those dry goods, and I want to tell you why. Not because I needed the money and not because I needed the stuff. It made me important. When I walked into a party, it's like, whoa, like Sean's here. You know, and that's what I was after. I was after importance. I wanted to be something special. And if I'm carrying this stuff, I'm something special. So things got bad, really bad. And I met my husband around 30 years of age. He was a straight arrow, and I knew that all this drug stuff was not going to fly with him. And I also, in the back of my head, thought that he was going to fix me, because I thought, you know, I just need somebody stable. If I find somebody really stable, I'm going to be okay. And so I left the drugs. I mean, that's the really confusing part for me about my alcoholism. I was able to just drop the drugs, leave them in Philly, and move to Allentown. What I found out looking backwards is that's when the drinking shot through the roof. I thought having a baby would fix me. It did not. I didn't drink through my first pregnancy. I did drink through my second one. And, you know, by the grace of God, I have two healthy children today. But I couldn't not drink. And I thought the problem was my husband. He needs to drink more, he needs to relax, and it was everybody's fault. And if you had my job and you had my life, you would drink too. Probably that I had a couple of bottoms. I was not a one-time winner. I didn't come to AA and just get it right away. It was suggested that I come here by a therapist. And it was about, I think, 2002. It was after my first daughter was born. And I remember this moment where my mom was my drinking buddy. And she and I would look at the clock and we would say, okay, we have an hour and 15 minutes to drink until Dave gets home. And we would just be pounding the martinis. And I'm holding my daughter and something happened and I spilled a gin martini all over her. Like, it's in her eyes. She's crying. And I'm absolutely horrified. I'm horrified because how am I going to clean this kid up before Dave gets home? You know, that's how sick I was. And the therapist, I know, again, I would just throw money at people, you know, fix me, you know, personal trainers and vitamins and books, and none of that stuff worked. But this woman suggested that I go to a meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, my face nodded, and I went, okay. In my head, I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I don't belong with those people. You know, what? But I want to be a good little patient. I want to go back the next day and say, you know, like next week and say, yeah, I went. And so I went to this group, and I remember being pretty shocked at what I saw. I saw people that were dressed like me. I saw a bunch of nice cars in the parking lot. And y'all tried to talk to me, but no way. You know, I was just like, hi, how you doing? I'm good. I'll see you later. And I went 1 year and 3 months without a drink, going on probably a total of 5 meetings that year. No program, no steps, no sponsor. It was the most miserable 15 months of my life. But what's interesting is things did get better. I mean, I did physically feel better. Mentally, I was clearing up a bit. Things were better, but, you know, with everything. And what I used to say all the time is, I am never going back to drinking. Like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so glad I quit drinking. You know, I'm never doing this again. And for absolutely no reason, I picked up a drink again. Because what I didn't know then that I know now is, I don't just have a physical allergy to alcohol. I have a mental obsession that runs 24/7, whether I'm drinking or not. And without any kind of solution, without the treatment for my alcoholism. So I thought alcoholism only hit me when I'm drinking. And that is not the case. So the mental obsession convinced me that I'm good. You know, I'm good. I was going through a really rough time. I suffered from anxiety and depression, and I was self-medicating with alcohol. That's the story my disease told me. And I remember that night, I picked up the drink, and, you know, it was like, oh, it's like just like coming back to, like, you know, your first love. And felt so good. I had a second one, and I was like, okay, this is it. I'm not drinking anymore. And I went home that night, and I woke up the next day, and I was like, you see, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. And the next, I think I skipped one day. I think I, you know, white knuckled it through one day. And then I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to have two drinks. You know, how many people in this room have had two drinks? And it didn't work. It just didn't work. Within 2 weeks, I was 100 times worse than I was when I stopped. And so I experienced the progressive nature of this thing, that it just does not, I didn't pick up where I left off. I picked up 10 miles down the road. And I had alcohol on all three levels of the house, like in the laundry room and, you know, wherever my husband was, I was moving. I was on the move and I'm drinking and just the lying and all this stuff that goes with that. The thing, and I would visit AA, you know, I visited AA, and then I sort of was an observer, but I wasn't a participant. And I'd come back, I'd get a couple weeks, maybe a month, and then I'd go back out, because I couldn't want what you had, because I didn't know what you had, because I wouldn't talk to you. I would dress to the nines, and, you know, look really put together, like, I don't need any help, thank you very much. Thank God for the beating delivered by alcohol. It got so bad, I almost committed suicide in a blackout the one night. And for me, that was kind of the end, because even though I didn't care if I lived or died, I didn't want my children to find me, because they don't deserve that. You know, and I know people say, like, you shouldn't get sober or come into recovery for other people. I did, you know, that's not why I stay, but I did. That just wasn't fair to my kids. And so I started going to a meeting called the Early Sobriety Group. They meet at 6:15 in the morning, 7 days a week. And it was the only thing that worked for me, because at the time I got sober, I had an infant and a toddler, and I worked part-time. And I remember I'd heard enough of the suggestions about this 90 and 90 thing, and I know that's not in the big book. However, I do believe it's a pretty decent suggestion. You know, I was instructed, you know what, Sean, you should probably go to a meeting a day. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and, you know, find out what we're about, and don't just go to the same meeting. I want you to move around. I want you to meet new people. And that's terrifying for me, because one thing I didn't share with you is I'm severely hearing impaired. I'm completely deaf in my right ear, and I'm about 50% deaf in the left one. So talking to people is very stressful. And I'm always afraid I'm going to say the wrong thing. I try to guess at what you're saying. I give the wrong answer. It's like, oh. So, you know, I was terrified of people when I got here, and lucky for me, at the second meeting, this woman walks up to me and she said, "Do you have a sponsor yet?" And I, you know, just did the deer in the headlights thing, and she said, "I'll be your temporary sponsor." And you know what? I love that temporary word. You know, for someone like me, I think if somebody had said to me, "Well, I'm going to be your sponsor," I would have freaked out and never come back. You know, but I can do the light commitment thing of a temporary. So we started working the steps right away. I'm incredibly fortunate that the group I was born out of believes in doing the steps, and they believe in doing the steps at a rapid clip. So we started. And we started with, like, the first three steps. I remember I got my 30-day coin. I was ecstatic. You know, 30 days is an eternity. I had not gone that long and been happy in a really, really, really long time. So I had my chip, and I remember I had 33 days, and there was this party that I was going to go to. It was a Halloween party, and I knew I was going to this thing. I didn't need to tell you about it, or I didn't need to talk to my sponsor about it, because I'm fine. I have my coin. I'm not going to drink. I'm okay. I know what I'm doing. I. And I got drunk. That was October 20th, 2006, with my coin in my pocket. And the thing I never want to forget is, there was an attorney at that party He had over 20 years in the program, and I stood there absolutely plastered telling him how great AA is and blah, 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 blah. You know, and he just stood there patiently, you know, talking to me, and I thought, you know, God bless him. And I know what that's like. I've talked to people that are reeking of alcohol, and they're just not there yet. I wasn't there. Thank God I woke up the next day. I had absolutely no idea how that happened. I wasn't going to drink. How did that happen? And that was the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because it shattered every ounce of, I can do this. I know what I'm doing. I got this. And I went back to my group the next day, and I had to say that I drank. That's an incredibly difficult thing to do, but I knew if I didn't do it, I'm dead. Like, I knew that was it. So I went back, and fully expecting you guys to, you know, kind of wag your finger at me and yell at me a little bit, and it's okay, like, I deserve it. And I'll never forget, you know, I shared, like, I drank last night. I don't know. I drank. And they were like, thank God you came back. Like, maybe you're done now. You know, I'm so glad you're here. I had never experienced unconditional love like that in my life. It confused me, quite honestly. Like, I'm expecting to be yelled at, and I was embraced, firmly embraced. And this one fellow said to me, he goes, you know what, Sean? Maybe you're the kind of alcoholic that needs 100% of the program. And he said it in such a kind way, I was able to go, yeah, I think you're right. You know, I can't take 99 out of 100 suggestions and stay sober. That's just not the nature of my disease. So from that point on, it was like full speed ahead. And so many people, I've been going around to all kinds of meetings around the Lehigh Valley, good groups, but I've been in step meetings, and people would have all this scary stuff to say about step four. You know, like, oh my gosh, step four is so horrible. And I remember thinking, you know, my sponsor said, Sean, she goes, we've all done the steps and we've lived to tell about it. It's only a big deal if you make it a big deal. It's like, you know, open up your book, and, you know, we went through column by column. And one thing I did forget to tell you, it's so important. This particular group is the place I was brought to. I had a best friend in sobriety. We were like a month apart, and she was always hassling me about coming to this meeting in Quakertown. She's like, you gotta come to Feet First. I'm like, it's too far. I'm not going. And I mean, she was on me for months. And I had a little under a year, and I'm okay, but I wasn't happy, joyous, and free. And I worked the steps with my first sponsor, but we'd worked them in a way that she had been taken through the steps. You know, it's just, people can only give me what they've received. So I was brought to this meeting. We're sitting outside, and this man comes up and plunks himself down at a table, and he goes, come with me. He grabs my hand, he walks me over to another table, sits me down in front of this woman, and he said, Sean, this is Ricky. Ricky, this is Sean. Ricky's going to take you through the steps. And I went, what just happened? And this woman said, who had four kids and a very full life, had me come down once a week, and we went through the book, line by line, from the page, like the blank page at the beginning, all the way through. And I did a fourth step out of the big book this time. And there were columns, and I was told to work down each column, not across. And there were three inventories that we completed. We did an inventory of resentments, a fear inventory, and what she called a sex conduct inventory. I prefer to call it an inventory of harms done to others. As we're going through these steps, though, I remember thinking, like, I don't really have any resentments. Like, I'm not upset with anybody. And in the family I grew up in, emotional control was very valued. Like, if you were like Clint Eastwood, you were cool. And, you know, I just completely denied that I was upset with anybody. And so my sponsor said to me, she goes, Has anybody ever hurt you? Has anybody ever let you down? You know, anybody ever disappointed you? I'm like, well, yeah, that's everybody. And she's like, put them down. Just write them down. And so, you know, we went through the work. And the most important part of the process for me were the prayers and the observations called for in the book on page 67. Like, the last column that I do, where I'm looking at this thing from an entirely different angle. And I've been in big book studies, and I so appreciate the people that have gone before me, because they pointed things out to me that I didn't see before. I had done the steps in terms of like a worksheet type thing, and I have nothing against worksheets. I've used them before, but this time I went through the steps. They said, Sean, take a look at what it says. It says, where were you? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid. Not were you. Of course you were. Where were you? And we had to get that specific. And that really helped me see things that needed to change, blind spots in my relationships with others. And so, you know, the whole thing, I'd love to be able to tell you, it's like once and done, oh, I did the steps and now I'm happy, joyous, free. I was for a time. And then, you know, I had about 8 years of sobriety and I wanted to drink and I didn't know why. And the worst part was I didn't want to tell you that I wanted to drink. You know, I sort of built up this image thing in AA that I wanted to protect. And I'll never forget, thank God. You know, for the grace of God, I'm sitting in a meeting and a couple of my sponsees are in a meeting. And I just, you know, the night before I'd driven past this crappy bar and I remember I looked and I went, man, I wish I could. I wish I could. And y'all taught me that if I leave that thought there, it's just going to grow. And I knew I had to raise my hand. And I didn't want to. I was pissed. And my ego was pissed. I was in that prison of what I think you think of me. And so the chairperson says, anybody having a problem with a drink? And I'm like, not me. And then my friend across the way, you know how we know each other so well? He's looking at me, and he's just looking at me like he knows something's wrong. And I just started to cry. And the jig was up, and I raised my hand. And I said, I want a drink. And the thing I feared the most, which is so stupid today, but I got free from it that day, the thing I feared the most was that you were going to judge me, that you're going to start picking apart my program and you're going to point out what I'm doing wrong. You know, just this terrible fear of like being wrong or, you know, not being perfect and all that nonsense that'll keep me out there and not here with you. Decreasing that separation was huge. And I did another round through the steps when I had about 10 years of recovery. And again, it's just my story. I can't say I'm proud of this, but the disease like turned on me. I mean, when I had 10 years of recovery, I'd always been very active carrying the message to other women. I'm speaking at meetings, I'm doing workshops, I'm sponsoring, like, you know, all these girls, and I'm dying on the inside. The disease turned on me, and I started being so critical of myself. Like, you know, I set this bar, like, this high for Sean. Everybody else is fine, you know, but the pride and the ego, like, well, you know, I gotta be this, and I gotta do that, and da, 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 da. And I wasn't living up to my own expectations, you know, unrealistic expectations. And I remember just wanting to die. And I need to go back through the work. And, you know, what I found out, and this, you know, I guess for some people this is a little controversial, but it really set me free, so I want to tell you about it. I did a fourth step on Sean, person that was the meanest to me. Absolutely the meanest person in my life was that voice in my head. And it was, thank God, You know, I think the disease will try to get me however it can get me. And I am so thankful that since that process, like, I became just another normal alcoholic. Nothing special, you know, just an alcoholic. And, you know, moving through, I remember with like step 6 and 7 for me, I didn't get it. Like, I didn't really understand. Like, I know there's those 2 little paragraphs in the big book. What it looked like for me in a practical sense is I've identified these things that are objectionable in steps 4 and 5. I definitely want to be rid of them. So I think. So what'll happen is an opportunity to exalt in that defect will drop right in front of me. I'll have an opportunity to gossip. We'll get a letter from the IRS not addressed to me, and I want to know what's in there. You know, there's things will happen in my life. I want to hide stuff. I want to lie. I want to embellish. And at that moment, it's like a fork in the road. You know, it takes no higher power, no prayer, no nothing for me to act the old way. You know, that's easy. In that moment, I have a choice. I can stop. I can humbly ask God to remove the shortcoming. And then do the opposite of what I want to do. It really, for me, it was I stopped living by my feelings in step 6 and 7. And I started living by principles. You know, my feeling is, you know, I want to talk crap about you. That's not a principle I live by today. And even as tempting as it, you know, maybe I can talk with this guy, and that's how I connect with you. That was my old way of establishing intimacy with somebody, would be kind of, you know, like yapping about somebody else. And it's a harmful, destructive thing. But the temptation was so great. And in that moment, I would pray, and it would leave. And I'm still left with a choice, though. You know, the thing I love about my higher power, he never, ever, ever is going to take back his first gift to me, which is my free will. So I have an opportunity to exercise that free will along the right lines every single day. I'd love to tell you that, you know, I'm bad 1,000 at that. I don't. And that's what steps 10, 11 are for. When we got to step 9, the big step 9, like my first couple of steps, it took me a month to make amends to my husband. That was probably the hardest one because I had done the most damage there. I could never understand why he was so upset that he would come home and find his wife passed out and kids wherever, you know. I didn't get it. I just really did not get it. And I remember thinking, like, you know, I told myself I wasn't a thief. You know, I didn't steal money. I didn't embezzle from the company. It's absolutely not true. Yes, I did. You know, I'd take off in the middle of the day and go meet a personal trainer during the workday, you know, and go to the gym and completely justify it. I robbed my husband of his emotional security. I robbed the family of thousands of dollars in liquor store bills. And so working with the sponsor was extremely helpful, because if it's just me alone trying to figure out the harms I've done to others, the list is going to be really, really short. So I was instructed to have some things written down. It was pretty easy because I was able to pull it from the specifics of where I was selfish and dishonest and self-seeking and frightened from that 4th step. You know, exactly where I was those things was written down in my own hand. So it wasn't complicated, but it was difficult to find the courage to do it. And I remember I kept waiting for the right time, and then finally it was like the voice inside said, now. And so my husband's sitting at the table on his laptop, and I said, you know, Dave, I said, I need to make amends to you, you know, for how I was, and I'm running down my list of all the, you know, the things I've done. And I was scared because my marriage was very thin ice when I got sober. And to bring all this stuff back up again didn't seem wise. But again, I made a decision to surrender my idea for the big book idea. And if the big book says this needs to be done, this is the path to freedom, okay, I'll take it. And I'm going down my list, and he's listening, and he's a really kind of a quiet guy. And I said, particularly this one time, I was holding, McKenna was a baby, I was holding her and I fell down in the dining room. It's the only time in 25 years my husband's ever yelled. Like, he's not a yeller. I just remember kind of coming to, and he's standing over me screaming. And I said, I endangered her life. I'm so sorry, like, when I fell down in the dining room. And all of a sudden, like, his head just snapped up. And I went, what? He goes, you didn't fall down in the dining room. I said, you fell down the stairs. I didn't know. I did not know. I fell down a full flight of stairs holding an infant. And, you know, that's why it's really important when I'm making amends. At the end, I always ask the other person, because how I think I've harmed them, may not be that was like the big deal for them. You know, for other people, it was just like, you just weren't there. Or all you had to do was talk about yourself. You never asked me how I was doing. And I ask people, you know, what have I left out? What am I not including here? And I was instructed that, you know, I'm not to apologize. It's not an I'm sorry. It's an amend. You know, it's a, how can I make this right? And most of the time the answer was, keep doing what you're doing. Sometimes the answer was, just go your way. Don't talk to me ever again. And I had to accept that. And not want to argue, you know, my ego wants to argue. Don't you know how wonderful I am now? You know, it's, accept it and give it to God. And I'm going to tell you one more amends story just because it was, it's unbelievable how when the willingness is there, the person just gets dropped in front of you. And, you know, I had a woman on my amends list. I was responsible in my clawing my way to the top. I was responsible for her losing her job because I designed this brilliant restructuring plan that would give me her program, and we don't need her anymore. And her husband was dying of cancer, but what do I care? You know, like, I want a promotion. And so I didn't exactly know how to find her, but I was praying, you know, praying, God, like, I want to get through these amends, please help me. And at the time, I was working as a pool nurse, and the front desk calls, and they're like, oh, there's a visitor here for so-and-so. Go around, come around the corner, and there she is. She's there to visit, like, her neighbor's son or something. And I felt all the blood drain out of my body, you know, like, terrified. And again, it's like the power of prayer. I'm, like, shaking and quaking, and I'm like, okay, God. I'm like, okay. I'm like, I'm scared. Help me. And I walk up to her, and, I mean, if the role was reversed, I would take a swing at me, you know. I walked up. And she looked at me, and she gave me a hug. She gave me a hug. And I just didn't understand that. And I said, you know, Deb, da 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 da. And she goes, I know. I know. I have no idea how that woman knew. But not only did she know that I was a really sick person, she'd already forgiven me. You know, I mean, that's not everybody's story. That's not the story of every amends. But, you know, I can't script the future. I think if it showed me anything, is I think I know what's going to happen. I think I know how you're going to respond. I don't know. I don't have the slightest idea. You know, for me, step 10, I got to be honest. Step 10 is something that I struggled with for years. I was an intermittent step 10 taker, mainly because, you know, I was viewing it the wrong way. Again, I was viewing with that critical eye, that judge, wait, let me see everything I did wrong today, and that's how I approached the 10th step. By the way, every place I screwed up and what still needs to change, and of course I'm going to avoid that. You know, that's, ugh. And And again, and I was working with the sponsor, and she said, have you not read all the words about this step? And I'm like, well, I guess not. You know, she said, you're seeing it through that critical lens, you know, of an alcoholic. Like, this is a balance sheet, you know? Things that were, thank God for the things you did well. And you need to identify some things that you did well. Because if you don't, you're just gonna turn right back into that. And I found for me, when I'm all right with me, you're fine. When I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, nothing bothers me. But if I'm cutting corners, if I'm slacking on something, right away, the critic comes out. And it's easy to blame you. Because if I can blame you, it shields me from the inconvenience of change. And so, step 10 has just become a much more positive thing for me. And I'm not afraid today, I'm not afraid to celebrate those teeny tiny gains, because I need to celebrate them. I like rewards, you know, I'm a person, I like presents, I like rewards. And there's no law that says I can't be good to myself. Not in a selfish way, but in a nurturing, like, I'm God's kid, he loves me kind of way. It's taken a lot of work from my sponsor, because she says to me over and over and over again, she says, self-care is not selfish. Self-care is not selfish. She's like, where are you on that list? And I'm like, why not? Da, 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 da. And she's like, and? My sponsor's actually a woman who once sent me to this makeup store called Sephora. She goes, I want you to go to Sephora and walk around for an hour. What? Like, not be productive for, you know, for an hour? Like, and that's why I have a sponsor. You know, I don't know what's best for me. For me, step 11, I forgot to mention this on the third step. The house I was raised in, we didn't go to church. We didn't talk about God. There was, I don't know, I guess it was pretty much an agnostic household. So I had a lot of prejudices, a lot of old ideas. I thought God was for weirdos and weak people, and I definitely thought if you had God in your life, you're definitely a hypocrite, you know. So when it came time to start this whole, you know, turn my will, my life over to the care of God, I knew I had to do something, but I also knew I need to be honest with my sponsor, and I'm like, I just, you know, this God thing, I have no idea. I've never prayed in my life. I don't know what I'm doing. And she said, you know what, Sean? So let's start here. She said, G-O-D can stand for good orderly direction from a group of drunks. So good orderly direction, God, and a group of drunks was my first higher power. So the 6:15 meeting was my first higher power. It's not my higher power today. It's grown leaps and bounds since then. But I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous that there isn't this, you must believe this, and if you don't, you're wrong. I'm incredibly thankful for that, because it enabled me to drop some of that intellectual nonsense and really open my heart. And the God of my understanding has done some things that are positively, absolutely undeniable. And I don't need anybody else to believe it, because I know it happened to me. So it took me like 6 months to get into a regular habit of prayer and meditation. You know, I'd remember for a couple days and then I'd forget. And then I'd be doing really well and I'd get busy or I'd go on vacation. And if I can't do something perfect right out of the gate, I don't want to do it at all. And so I, you know, give up. And my people and my network and my sponsor, keep at it. You know, I was given permission to do something suckily. They're like, this is going to suck. You're going to do it terrible. You're going to be awful at it. I want you to go be awful at it. Okay. I can do that because I'm not doing this well. And she literally turned it on me. She goes, I want you to go be a failure at this. That's how I ran my first 5K. I absolutely was not going to finish this thing. I knew, because I knew I couldn't. I couldn't do it.
And in sobriety, I was like, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to fail. I'm going to go and I'm going to run this race. I'm going to drop out. I'm going to quit. And you know what happened. I finished. Of course I finished. You know, it's just the problems up here. And so the act of prayer and meditation helps me surrender this thing. You know, on awakening, not 40 minutes after I've been up, on awakening, I ask God to direct my thinking, you know. Help it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. You know, show me all throughout the day, you know, what my next step is to be. And for me, you know, step 10, it's just an ongoing thing. It says continue. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Just watch for it. Don't hit yourself in the head with a club when you see it, because you are going to see it. But watch for it. And when it happens, there's a solution for that. And it doesn't involve beating myself up. It involves, oh, okay, I'm about to insert myself in somebody else's business. Pull back. Help me. It's that simple. And I remember feeling very afraid at the beginning of the steps, like, who am I going to become? Like, you know, I don't want to turn into some new person. Like, I liked myself a little too much when I got here. And I didn't really want to change. And I remember my one sponsor said to me, she said, Sean, you're always going to be Sean. She goes, you're not going to change. It's all that garbage. You know, the person you were really supposed to be is going to come forth. You're not going to change who you are. And she was right. Another thing that I do is part of my, like, step 11. There's a lot more to it today than there was in the beginning. In the beginning, it was simply like, help me in the morning, read the daily reflection, and thank you at night. And that was about it. You know, and I go to my meeting and we pray the Lord's Prayer, which, by the way, I learned in AA. I did not know the words. I didn't know anything when I got here. And, but then I would start to build on that. You know, I picked up a 24-hour day book, and my sponsor gave me this other book that has to do with, like, codependency. And I remember at one point, I literally had, like, a stack of, like, 9 books. It was too much. You know, I'll take something good, and I'll make it really complicated that I can't even do it. And so as we started editing, you know, I know today I need to fill my head with something really positive. And I listen to a really good message, usually on YouTube. I'll either listen to a non-AA, like a spiritual teacher, or I also listen to AA speakers, because I need to hear the solution. And the solution doesn't naturally, organically happen in my mind when I wake up. I need to put something in there. I wake up 2 hours before I have to leave the house. Because 90 of those minutes, half an hour is for the hair and makeup, but 90 minutes is for that God time. It's for that, I've got to have that. If I don't have that, I'll be running at Mach 10 with my hair on fire, hurting people all the way, and just running on fear and adrenaline. I don't want to live like that today. And in the evening, I have these two little books on the bedside. I love them. One's an AA book, the other's not an AA book. And because of things like the set-aside prayer, groups like Feet First, Big Book Comes Alive, study groups, I've had the opportunity to set aside my old ideas about everything and to be wrong. Like, one of the best things in the world for me is to find out I'm wrong about something. Because if there's a problem and I find out where I'm wrong, I can change that. I can't change you. I can absolutely change me. And I'll say a little bit about the 12th step. I got snookered into sponsoring people. It was not my plan. I was told that if you want to keep it, you got to give it away. That's it. Like, you will not stay sober unless you carry this message to other women. It was that firm of a directive, and so I did, and I didn't want to, not at all. But what I found was, after I'd get off the phone, or I'd meet somebody, and we'd be, you know, in the book, and I
felt like I was on cloud nine, you know, or whatever problem I had, it just went away. And I also found this, somewhere in the literature it talks about, like, you know, if he'll take care of us as long as, you know, we do as we think he would have us and perform his work well. And that is a very predictable sequence of events in my life. If I have a problem and I go attend to my business, like I love to sponsor women, so I have people that call me in the morning and people that call me on the way home from work, and we're talking about the steps, and God takes care of my problem. Now, I don't have to sit there and meditate and come up with a plan and fix my problem. While I'm busy helping his kids, he just swoops in and solves my problem. Or I come home and there's the email, done. That has happened over and over and over again. When I do, I get my hands into something and try to fix it, I'm in deep trouble. I'm going to make a mess. I don't know, I just have to say this. This is one of those, like, beyond your wildest dreams kind of thing to be standing up here tonight, because you have no idea how impossible it is that I'm doing this. No idea. I suffered from crippling panic attacks. Like, so bad, I couldn't sit in a hairdresser's chair to get my hair done. I couldn't make it. I remember once in Philly, I left, I had all these foils on my head. I got up and I just left. I couldn't handle it. I had really, really bad anxiety and panic. And, you know, one of the promises says, like, when we straighten out spiritually, we straighten out mentally and physically. That has definitely been my experience, and that's all I have. Thanks for listening.
The group would also like to remind anyone in need of a sponsor to please see someone after the meeting. Would anyone who has working knowledge of the 12 steps please raise your hand? Thank you. Please help us close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Whose Father?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Nice work.